And as we think about the science of ultimate human potential, everyone is so genetically different that we're experiencing the cold plunge differently. We're experiencing the sauna differently. So to the parent, the more that you can put yourself in a position of experience, get your shoes off. Learn how your feet work. Here's a few exercises you can do right now. Can you lift your big toe but not the small toes? Can you lift your small toes but not your big toes? Have people do this in a group. And it's like watching neuroplasticity in action. They try and nothing happens. They try again and nothing happens. They try again and something happens. Because they're rebuilding that connection that's been, they've been divorced from for so long.
Welcome to the Future of Education podcast, hosted by Mackenzie Price. Mackenzie is the founder of a revolutionary new school model that's disrupting education through AI. Join us as we discuss the latest in education innovation.
I think we as adults listen to this and we're like, this sounds amazing. Wow, I need to sign up for this program. This is exactly what I need. But I assume you get some kids who show up kind of begrudgingly and they're like, is this really what I care about doing? Am I going to practice the breathing? Am I going to do that? You know, what else are you doing to make it cool?
You know, we haven't had that happen. And I think the reason that we haven't had it happen is that the program's entirely volitional. You know, to look at the neuroscience around volitional learning versus forced learning is another reason that we chose not to fit this in places that it doesn't fit. If I am in a regular public school system, there's a lot of things that I can do, but I can't give a lecture on the benefits of barefoot training, sauna, and cold plunge at the same level of impact that I can by just simply being barefoot, being in a sauna, and doing cold plunge. In fact, I once was teaching this at a traditional high school. It wasn't a traditional high school. It was a Waldorf school I was teaching this. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the benefits and the neuroscience. And it just seemed crazy that down the road, I had a facility that had all of these things. So I said to the school, I said, I'm not doing this anymore. I said, bring them. Bring them to where health is happening. And they did. And it was amazing. And watching these kids, it's actually, there's a video on my Instagram, in the snow, walking barefoot up a trail to jump in a frozen tank. And their energy's through the roof. They're in the sauna. They're learning how to add steam to the rocks, or how to create steam by adding water to the rocks. And what they're doing, which you pointed out, is they're doing co-regulation and they're breaking the isolation barrier. When we look at the neuroscience of exercise and sleep and nutrition, the biggest missing link is that we have a completely different physiological response in community with each other. So if I don't see kids laughing, now I have to cultivate that. I'll give you a direct example. Imagine that somebody does bring a friend and the friend thinks it's more of a traditional fitness center and maybe is a little bit more unfamiliar because I've never seen reluctance. I see unfamiliarity. We're kicking our shoes off. We're going to talk about breathing. I'm not just going to go and hit the leg press, which we don't have anyway. So he or she would be out of luck. Our job is to create environments where play, co-regulation is happening, and it's part of the architecture of the workout. So as soon as young people come in, we hand them a med ball when we get to the dynamic part of the workout after they've done the things I've described, and we have them just do simple ball passes to each other that increase in complexity and increase in the partner dynamic. I have to throw something, you have to catch it in a different position. All of a sudden, what you're doing is you're bond building, you're gamifying, you're bringing something that could happen in an isolated environment. One person on one side of the room, the other on the opposite side, they never connect. And you're making social connection and camaraderie and laughter and that hormonal exchange. You know, I know that, not to jump the gun in the conversation, but when you think about artificial intelligence, the future in general, we get kids to remember that there are things that make us distinctly human and that there are pair bonding hormones. There are neurochemical exchanges. There is something about humans being with humans that matters. And when we can reinforce that in every single lesson, even if they don't understand the underlying neuroscience, they kind of get that it would be different to be in their bedroom with a set of dumbbells in complete isolation, watching a workout on YouTube. Definitely better than nothing, but we're shooting to be the best at creating the architecture for these kids and their families.
Connected. Well, I have to tell you, David, I have a cold plunge at my gym And the only way I'm able to get myself in that cold plunge is if my workout partner agrees to do it with me. And so she and I can stare at each other and we count the 3 minutes and we take turns distracting each other. And I have never appreciated a workout partner as much as I do when I'm doing those cold plunge, baths. And I think that, again, also connecting with community and helping to see that, you know, being in touch with your body and feeling good is a lot of fun. I know for me and my personal experience, my favorite time physically was when I was in community doing CrossFit workouts, right? Like it was just so much fun. It brought so many things and that grounding is absolutely important. So what can parents be doing at home to help promote this physiology first mindset with their kids?
One of the great challenges is that because most of us have not learned about our physiology first, the revolution has to start somewhere. So most parents honestly don't have any idea how to build a workout, how to teach the basics of anatomy and physiology. Even a lot of what we hear about around breathing exercises to reduce stress and anxiety, they don't really know how to coach them or what they're about. So parents can be limited in that way. And what I would say is that, you know, the more that the parent can be a knowledge seeker about health, a knowledge seeker about the neuroscience and the underlying science, and then immediately make the leap that most people don't make into trying, into experience, into not conflating information with education, education with knowledge, and knowledge with wisdom. You've done cold plunge, so you know cold plunge better than the neuroscientists who are publishing papers on cold plunge because they're talking about something theoretical and abstract. But you are a unique individual genetically. There is no one like you, no one in the world. And that is true for every young person. And as we think about the science of ultimate human potential, everyone is so genetically different that we're experiencing the cold plunge differently. We're experiencing the sauna differently. So to the parent, the more that you can put yourself in a position of experience, get your shoes off, learn how your feet work. Here's a few exercises you can do right now. Can you lift your big toe but not the small toes? Can you lift your small toes but not your big toes? Have people do this in a group. And it's like watching neuroplasticity in action. They try and nothing happens. They try again and nothing happens. They try again and something happens. Because they're rebuilding that connection that's been, they've been divorced from for so long. So physicality, be barefoot, practice the exercises that you hear. Have experiences, model them. And as much as you possibly can, avoid ever normalizing exhaustion. Let's normalize optimal health and realize that it's hard. We're struggling to always achieve it, but we're on a path to feeling awesome. We need to make awesome the new norm.
I love that idea. Make awesome a new norm. And I think what you mentioned about the idea of just such individualistic, relationships we all have with our own bodies, you have a provocative take on what many are calling just the ADHD epidemic. If you could explain your perspective on moving away from clinical labels towards addressing the actual biological needs of what I think you and I would both agree are movement-starved students.
Movement-starved is a great way to talk about this and a great way to think about this because no one is built to sit still under fluorescent lights, staring at a blackboard, learning things that don't inspire them. That is an outdated model from the industrial age that we need to reinvent. You're reinventing it, right? So when we think about the skyrocketing rates of what is being labeled ADHD and the number of kids who are suffering at this point, I get parents writing me from all over the world, Mackenzie, all over the world. They want to diagnose my 5-year-old, my 7-year-old, my 10-year-old, because he or she doesn't want to sit still. We have to address this by first understanding the history behind this terminology. It is so important to recognize that ADHD is an acronym that stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. Mm-hmm. So where did the acronym come from? Where did it start?
Where did it come from?
Well, it started in the late 1800s, the very late 1800s, right here in the UK, in London. A pediatrician named George Still was monitoring a group of kids, roughly 40 kids in a London hospital. And he noticed that some of them did not, in fact, like to sit still because they were not, in fact, all the same kid. And the great revelation that's happening right now is that kids are not uniform soldiers marching off into whatever mission you send them in or towards. They're unique individuals who metabolize dopamine at different rates. The way that they pay attention and focus is completely individual. How much movement each child needs to stimulate dopamine and how much novelty is completely individual. So the model in the late 1800s looked at kids. Did some of you don't all behave the same way? His great revelation was moral defect of character among children.
Oh, boy. I didn't know it was that dark and deep.
It gets dark and deep. The ADHD story begins with kids in a London hospital in the late 1800s being diagnosed with moral defect of character. And it's important to linger on that because where we place our attention can only be seen as normal or abnormal under a moral architecture. You're asking a deeper philosophical question. Should we pay attention to what we're captivated by and moved by?
Mm-hmm.
Should we pay attention to what we're told to? That is a philosophical question rooted in a moral architecture. And then we can debate it. You can say, I think that kid should learn to a level of obedience. And that's a philosophical conversation, not a medical one. So moral defect of character was the underlying terminology until, I believe it was the 1960s, maybe it was late 50s, when the name changed once again to hyperkinetic reaction of childhood. For anybody listening, trying to,
reaction to childhood. I love that part. Yes.
The ludicrous nature of this is they noticed that kids had something called kinetic energy because you've sat them for 7 hours in a chair and they wanted to move. Mm-hmm. And so their kinetic reaction, which is clearly a disorder, under the architecture, again, of morality, the architecture of an institution. And we can have a conversation about institutionalization, how should kids behave when told to. This is a philosophical conversation, again, not a medical one. And so, but these are being treated as medical issues. They're being treated as psychological or psychiatric disorders. We're labeling these kids with disorders instead of honoring the fact that they're honoring their body.
The other thing I think is just absolutely diabolical that the system does is then they try to put a blanket solution to everybody, even if they're having. And I think probably the most egregious example was one I came upon about a year ago, where there was a girl who said that her school had instituted silent lunches. So they weren't allowed to speak in the cafeteria. And I'm sure there was some dim-witted adult who said, you know what, those, you know, few kids who are constantly behaviorally troubled, we need to chill out and give our adults a little bit of time of a break. So we're going to make everyone be silent. When I heard that story, I just about fell over. I couldn't even believe that this is stuff that's happening in the year 2026. Silent lunches. Have you heard of that, David?
I have heard of that. And I think that what we're witnessing at large, and I think that us as entrepreneurs, as future builders working to model building the future, we can be very direct and honest about the fact that there's a power game being played. And the power game is in this room, I'm bigger than you, so I tell you what to do. And in our rooms, we respect the brilliance and genius of the child and help to cultivate it as they work to shape the future. There's a line in the sand here between whether this is an environment of education or whether it is institutionalized obedience. And just to take this to you with the lineage, just so we can wrap it up, hyperkinetic reaction of childhood became ADD, which became ADHD. And now you have millions. 7 million kids in the U.S. have ever been diagnosed with ADHD. There's two complex points that we have to be able to address separately. One, you would have to agree with this premise that not paying attention to what you're told to represents a disorder. You'd have to agree with the premise that came out of the institutions of the late 1800s and that wanting to move your body when you've been made to be sedentary represents a type of disorder. So you have the premised argument that you have to discuss. But then you have the other issue, which is how many kids do you know that meet the physiological prerequisites for attention or focus? Because that would require adequate sleep, which 7 in 10 kids don't get. It would require adequate exercise, which less than 25% of kids get. Less than 25. And it would ideally require our diet not to be 65% ultra-processed foods that send our glucose levels to skyrocketing and then crashing. So these poor kids are fighting both a moralistic lens on how they should be, which has now been medicalized, and they're fighting their own bodies, which need sunlight, movement, water, nutrients, support, and mentorship. And we're stepping up in that fight and saying, we see what is happening to these kids. We will not have a generation of kids believe that they are broken when they are in fact limitless. They just need skills, tools, and support.
Yeah. And one of the things we see, because this comes all the time with families, will reach out to us and say, well, my child's got, you know, ADHD and is this. And we say, you know what? Have them come in and experience, you know, a day at school. And then when our guides, our teachers are able to take time to say, you know what, these kids, they need a brain break to go run a lap, right? Or we need to go, you know, outside and play football or go swing kettlebells, whatever it is amazing how so often we see such improvement in behavior and focus abilities when they've gotten, one, some exercise, and two, some more autonomy and freedom of how they control their bodies. I think I just put a video on the other day on my Future of Education Instagram where we were in one classroom, and in this one classroom, there were so many different places where a kid could work. They could be on an exercise ball. They could be on a wiggly stool. They could be in a regular thing. They could be in a bean bag. They could be all over the place, a standing desk, you know, what it is. And I think it is amazing that we force these children to just, you know, sit strictly instead of giving them a little bit more focus. And probably one of the things I've heard from sometimes critics will say, well, kids need to learn how to be bored. They need to learn how to sit still in this. And I just look at that and I'm like, okay, first of all, learning how to be bored is the craziest thing I've ever heard. And yes, I agree. People will learn how to control their bodies and sit still. That doesn't mean that they should never have the ability to feel autonomous and have agency over how they move.
I don't know that I've been bored. And I say that realistically. And I meet a lot of people in the high performance world. I think what you and I are doing to a large degree too is we're taking high performance culture, we're bringing it to these kids. And we're saying, look, yeah, no, I am massively excited about the future. My mind is always working on how we can build our organization to a global powerhouse that reshapes education and healthcare. That's what I focus on. And the kids that are being told that they should be ready to be bored, we really have to be honest about, here's a way to think about motivation scientifically. And I think it lets us be a little bit more honest in how we appraise the level of mentorship that our kids deserve.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look at the human brain metabolizes dopamine at three speeds, really fast, moderate, or slow. And to really break this down, you know, the person is metabolizing dopamine very, very quickly, is going to seek novelty. Their mind is racing with exciting ideas. They are creative, innovative. They want to change the world. They're going to be big picture thinkers. And that's roughly somewhere around 30% of the population. These are rough estimates, mm-hmm. right? Moderate is I can really kind of vibe in either environment. If you tell me what to do, I can kind of get away with it. I can do it, but I would maybe rather be moving. I maybe rather be in a more exciting environment. And then the slower metabolizers of dopamine are going to be a lot more comfortable with traditional authority because it relaxes them to have that structure. Well, that's great. The challenge that you get is when somebody who's not incredibly driven, passionate, and motivated looks at the passionate, motivated, driven child and says, well, you need to calm down, kid. You need to be a little less excited. You need to be a little bit more ready for, you know, to be taken out to pasture here, because we both know that the jobs of the future, the entrepreneurial landscape, is now going to favor the novelty-seeking, fast, quick-thinking, passionate entrepreneur. The economy has changed so fundamentally that you could argue that in 1930, that the ability to sit still, follow directions, could get you a job in one of two industries, the industrial industries, the factory, mm-hmm. or the military. And you could argue that that might lead to a nice home and the ability to take a vacation and to have some money in the bank. I don't know anyone making the argument that that is any longer the case. The jobs for future are changing. Obedience is not the value proposition. Autonomy is.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think agility and ability to adapt and be dynamic, which, by the way, so much of what you're teaching in a physiology first kind of understanding of the body, that's what's helpful for us. And I think the other thing is, you know, especially, you know, there's so much debate around what is the future going to look like in an AI driven world. And I just was at a dinner party where people were saying, you know, universal basic income will come and a person will have the opportunity to just simply plug in and be fully entertained and fully cared for or whatever. And yet there's still always going to be that group in society that is saying, how can we push the edges of knowledge and development. And that's what we want to raise young people to be, the ones living on that frontier, you know, where they're growing and pushing. And this is such an important thing. Well, David, I love the work you do. You've inspired me to go get in the cold plunge again, because I have to say, I don't love it. It's not fun. It makes me cold. It's hard, but it is very good for us. And I think more schools need to be adapting this. And we as parents can work with our kids to, one, make it fun, and then find ways we can connect. And I think this whole conversation is something that, you know, I'm going to go back and listen to, just thinking about myself, and that, you know, these are good lessons that we should take into us as adults in terms of being, you know, just connected and in touch with how we're feeling in our bodies and how they work. In fact, I just kicked my slippers off. I'm walking barefoot the rest of the day. So we'll do that.
Well, I think, you know, it may be something to, as we bring the conversation to a close, is to realize that we're only on the edges of the new frontiers of human potential. Here's a framework that everyone can maybe take away. I'm writing a lot right now about the code of potential. We have to realize that me and you, and everybody listening to this, we share 99% of the same DNA. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's a little more than 99%. We are the same in the most boring ways. We have ears on the side of our head, eyes on the front, we stand on two legs. And if you go to any major metropolitan city, you'll realize that, right? We're the same in the most boring ways. But the less than 1% of ways that we're different, the less than 1% of DNA differences, are millions and millions of DNA differences. The optimal diet for me, training program, environment, proclivities, when you get that puzzle of potential right, even by putting one more piece in, you see a child or an adult, you see the light come back in their eyes, they're a being coming who they are born to be. And we haven't done that yet. You know, we're building the most personalized approach to health education for kids. When you can take this data on someone's code of potential and actually put it into action in the classroom, we have not yet seen what that can do. We are only on the very, 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 we're at the infancy of a revolution in health, mental health, physical health, brain health. And I hope that through your work and through ours, that it is also a revolution in social health. Because we need each other, we need to work with each other, we need to mentor these kids, and we need them to know that no matter what anyone has labeled them, they are truly limitless, and that they haven't yet tapped into that potential, and they can. And with the support of your work, the support of Physiology First, the support of the parents out there listening who want to lead the charge, they will.
Yeah, I always say that it's our job to build an environment that helps unlock that potential. And I love the work that you're doing. Well, thank you, David, for joining us. And for those of you who are listening and excited, go check out more of his work. Where can we find information on the free programming that you have?
So you can find us here in Manchester, England, at our flagship campus. We're actually in Sale, UK, which is right outside of Manchester. You can find our affiliates in New Hampshire, in New Jersey. We have affiliate sites launching in Australia. We will be building our affiliate program globally. And you can find us online at physiologyfirst.org. And I'm quite active at physiologyfirst on Instagram.
That's where I saw you on Instagram. So that's great. Well, thanks, David, for joining me. I love that you are helping build out what I think is the future of education and maximizing potential.
Same here. Thank you so much, Mackenzie.
Thanks for listening to Mackenzie Price and the Future of Education podcast. If you haven't hit that subscribe button, now is the time to do it so you can stay up to date on all our episodes. You can connect with Mackenzie on social media and be part of our daily conversation over on Instagram at future_of_education. Lastly, if you're loving what you're learning, please leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll be back in your feed soon. But until then, remember, kids are limitless, and it's our job to unlock their potential.